Trust for Sustainable Living presents Speaking of Sustainability, a podcast about the environment and the issues our planet faces. Today we will be talking to Jennifer Hong as part of our mini-series on green jobs. Today's episode is hosted by James Myers. Jennifer Hong is a graduate from the University of British Columbia, holding a BSc Honours in Forest Sciences, specializing in forest ecosystem services. She has worked for various government agencies and departments, including Parks Canada, the City of Surrey, British Columbia, the Singapore National Parks Board, and Environment and Climate Change Canada, supporting a range of land management and climate change adaptation policies and programs. She currently works as a policy analyst for the Canadian Forest Service, supporting international forest policy, and has previous experience advancing bioeconomy policies. Jennifer was a youth delegate at COP26 and COP27, and is currently a global ambassador with Youth for Nature, where she supports youth engagement and participation in international forest fora such as the UN FAO's World Forestry Congress and World Forestry Week, and conceptualized the Faces of Forestry campaign. Welcome, Jennifer Hong, to the podcast. Really interested to have you here and to hear about your career and the many other volunteer interests that you have. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me here today.
It's great to have you. And maybe if you could start us off just by explaining about your current work and sort of how you got started in that, because I understand or I read you didn't intend to go into the profession of forestry.
Yeah, that is correct. So I'd say that my career path has been somewhat unconventional and in my mind, a bit of a series of happy accidents. So currently I am a policy analyst with the Canadian Forest Service. So we are a government body working at the federal level in Canada, and we work on different issues related to things like working with provinces and territories to manage forests in Canada. We also look at things like international trade and other international commitments that are related to forests as well, and sustainability, biodiversity, other aspects like that. And so I guess that's where I am now. I might just backtrack, as you asked, to tell you a bit more about kind of how I got into things in forestry. So I grew up in Vancouver, in British Columbia, and it's a beautiful place. There's lots of beaches and mountains and forests, but I largely grew up in the city, so I didn't actually have much exposure to being outside and being in nature. And when I applied to university, so I decided to stay in BC, and I had initially applied to study general sciences at UBC, and I had intended to become a doctor and wanting to apply to medical school at least. And so what had happened was there was a bit of an admission mix up, and I ended up going into forestry. So the Faculty of Forestry at UBC, which at the time they were offering science degrees as well. So I kind of went into it through this mix up, intending to switch out after a year or two of being in the faculty. But I ended up meeting this professor who was super passionate about forests and ecosystems. And I kind of realized that there was just so much more to the forestry world that I didn't realize existed. And I loved the aspect of, you know, being able to walk down the street and seeing a tree that I think, you know, I would see so much more than what the average person might see, right? And I think I kind of fell in love with that. And it started this passion for wanting to be outside and for wanting to talk to other people about it. So that was kind of how things started there. And, you know, I think the faculty was really great in terms of the education that it offered as well. So, you know, we were always outside doing actual experiential labs and research. So that was really neat. And I started getting involved as well with the UBC community, as well as the faculty itself. And I also worked for the faculty, and I did the co-op program. So it's basically a series of different internships every summer. And I also worked with the student council as well. And I did an exchange in Singapore. So yeah, I really took my time to explore the different opportunities and options that the university offered and the faculty offered. And I tried different sectors within forestry. So I did some work doing infield restoration with the private organization. And I also worked for the university botanical garden as well, doing a bit of research and event planning. And then I landed into the public sector with different government agencies. So I have experience with Parks Canada, working on some public programming and outreach, as well as Environment Canada, which was related to providing funding for energy policy. And then now at the Canadian Forest Service, and I used to work in the bioeconomy space, which is basically finding ways to support the use of wood in and sustainably manage wood in products that maybe we use fossil fuels for now. So displacing that. And then currently I work with the International Forestry Team in the Forest Service, working on our international commitments. So things that are related to the UNFCCC, so the climate change COPs, and then also the biodiversity COPs.
Wow, that's quite an interesting, fascinating range of projects. And I do want to talk about more of the work that you do now. And you mentioned a number of different areas that I thought we could explore, but maybe just start off with a very high level, just, you know, brief description of what forestry education entails. So you talked a little bit about your co-op work, your in-field work, you know, just for somebody considering starting in a forestry program, can you give a sense of what that would involve over, what, 4 years of education?
Yeah. So I think the university, so when I was there, it was structured into several different streams. So I think that's the first thing that I realized as a student studying was that there's just so many different areas of forestry that you could go into. So you have the silvicultural side, which is learning the science behind a forest ecosystem and how you can manage it sustainably. You'd also have things like wood products processing, which is a field where you're utilizing wood, right? And trying to make different products out of it that people will need. So I think a really interesting example would be like timber for wood construction buildings and pre-constructed buildings and mass timber buildings, which also links to some of the newer programming that I know that the university offers. So they have the bioeconomy program, which looks at different ways that we can utilize wood, you know, for example, breaking it down chemically to create like different products. And so we've got the bioeconomy stream. We have forest sciences, which is what I had studied, which is definitely a bit more of an academic perspective of forests. So really looking at ecosystem services, ecosystem dynamics, biodiversity and ecology, different forest physiology. So, you know, understanding how a tree works, right? Why it drops its leaves, why it changes colors in the fall, different things like that. And genetics as well was another aspect of that work. And we also have the conservation side of forestry. So that is looking at, again, managing all of the natural resources for conservation purposes, looking at species at risk and different population dynamics. And then finally, I think the university also has an urban forestry program. So this one is looking more at how we manage our trees in cities and areas that have more of a human presence, I would say.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I didn't realize that there were so many different areas that could be explored there. And in terms of the work that you did outside in the field, what was the most interesting aspect of that? What did you learn that you didn't expect to learn when you were out in the field?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So in the field, in terms of doing the restoration work, you mean?
Yeah.
So I think that position was really interesting because I was able to see firsthand what it was like to work in the field and just see firsthand kind of how, you know, remaking a rock weir. So these are rock structures that increase oxygen in streams for salmon to reproduce. And so kind of seeing how things happen on the ground compared to the policy or the report that you would write after it and kind of trying to translate that so that people who are making decisions or who are thinking about how they would manage that piece of land afterwards was a really interesting thing to learn about. And trying to kind of translate that importance into words, I think, was something I learned.
Yeah, I guess very important to have that practical background so that what you're policy. I guess you're doing mostly policy work now.
Yeah.
And to the extent that that relates to the practicalities of implementing things, I guess is so key. Mm-hmm. And did you work with groups like other people in the field or?
Yeah. So in that position, actually, I worked with a group of high school students. So I was in university and we had hired high school students to help us in the field. I actually think that's a great segue because I work a lot now in youth engagement work as well and trying to get more young people interested in being outside and working in forestry in general. So I had that opportunity to do a little bit of mentorship and training and engagement with the local community that way. And we would do, so we had students that we had hired and we were, you know, offering them a really great summer position and some work experience. And then we also worked with volunteers as well of different age ranges in that position to complete all the field work. And I think it helped me kind of continue building that skill, right, of engaging and working with the groups of different people. And again, translating that technical knowledge into more simple terms, I'd say.
And yeah, so maybe tell us a little bit about the outreach work that you do now and who are you reaching out to? Kind of how many people does that involve and what types of outreach are you doing?
Yeah, so I work with an organization right now called Youth for Nature. It is a for youth, by youth organization that is global and it works at the nexus between climate and nature. So we're talking about climate change, but we're also talking about biodiversity. And basically, the organization works on empowering young people and youth in climate nature spaces through capacity building and storytelling activities. And so my main work with them has been through this project that I call the Faces of Forestry. It's a media-centered storytelling project that showcases different stories of individual youth who are involved in different parts of the forestry sector around the world. So I think the audience really is for people who perhaps are engaged in forestry, but in a different part of it, or for those who maybe don't have any knowledge about forestry at all. I think I really wanted to showcase diversity in that project. So diversity in terms of the people and also in terms of the work that could be done in forestry and what forests mean to different people as well.
And that's a global organization?
Yes.
Yeah. It involves people from like roughly how many countries would be involved?
So we are kind of aligned ourselves with the UN regions. So there is representation from all of the regions there.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. And if anybody wants to join who's interested, I guess maybe it's a good place if you're thinking of a career in forestry, maybe to just join something like that and find out a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it's a really great organization to explore different aspects of climate and nature related topics. So, you know, again, like I said, we work a lot in storytelling. So it's about kind of sharing experiences that you have on the ground and really localizing the capacity and knowledge of that young person where they are when they join the organization. So it could be related to forestry, but I think it could also be related to a lot of other similar fields. So, you know, oceans, for example, or agriculture is another huge aspect as well that we kind of try to work on.
Right. And I guess there are differences in each community, in each area of the world. You mentioned that you spent some time in Singapore, and I'm just wondering how your experience there showed something different maybe than what you experience in Canada. Like, is there differences in approach? What are some of the differences?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the huge differences is that Singapore is a very small country in comparison to Canada. So I think their governance and the pace at which they work are completely different. And, you know, in terms of priorities, I think in Singapore, one of the huge themes that kind of cross-cut a lot of their work is that the city is meant to be a garden, right? Or the city state is meant to look almost like a garden. So the way that they manage their forest, which I'd call an urban forest, is very different. You know, in Canada, like at a federal level, I'd say that, you know, again, we work much more with provinces and territories, and that's the level that we work at. Whereas in Singapore, you're very much looking at the city state as a whole, and it's more urban of an application overall. Whereas, you know, in Canada, again, we have like our wild forests and different dynamics there, right, with the different stakeholders as well. So as an example, like when I was in Singapore, we used drones to manage some of the areas that we had planted. So that was something completely new. And I think in Canada, that's an application that is starting to happen as well, but there's a lot of different research that is going into it and different applications for it here locally. And I think another thing that I personally had a big interest in when I was in Singapore was we worked on opening therapeutic gardens. So it was gardens that were purposely created to stimulate all the senses, and especially to help those who maybe were in the elderly demographic or like youth with disabilities, for example. So there's a lot of intentional planting. So for example, lemongrass is like a very traditional plant that is used in Singapore, especially for cooking. And so that really stimulates like the olfactory senses, right? And the sense of smell and bringing back memories. So that's something we worked on. I think in Canada is a contrast, like we're just starting to kind of get on these discussions about how important forests are to wellness, right? And we have the new Park RX system where some doctors are piloting prescriptions for people to go outside. So I think very similar applications with forestry, but just at different paces and different scales.
And that's interesting, the different size of, obviously Singapore is very small compared to Canada. And you mentioned in Canada, your work or part of your work involves the different jurisdictions within Canada, the provinces, as well as the federal level. And you mentioned you're working on Canada's global commitments to the extent that, you know, a forest really doesn't know international boundaries. I mean, the thing that happens to a forest in Canada can affect things in the United States, as we discovered last week. You know, I'm doing this interview from Toronto, and our city was blanketed in smoke from forest fires for practically a whole week, but that smoke went all the way south of the border. And so in terms of the international work, that kind of cohesiveness of the international forestry community, is there some positive changes happening in that sense that more jurisdictions are getting together to cooperate on forestry issues?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think I can't speak to, you know, all the countries that are working on this, but I think in terms of if we're just looking at fire and that example, I think there's a lot of support from the global community, right? So we see France, for example, was sending over firefighters to support, and Australia as well. So I think there are a lot of like-minded countries that we work together with to, you know, manage issues like this. And I think in terms of the global scale, we also are seeing forests being discussed much more, you know, at the climate COP, for example, right? So we've got something called the Forest Climate Leaders Partnership, where we're finally discussing forests and getting leaders from different countries to commit to forest-related actions, which I don't think we've ever really seen before. So we're getting there, I would say, in terms of that conversation. And I'd also say forests are really complex, and, you know, there's systems that take time, right? And so it's going to be a long conversation, but I think it's finally starting to really get that attention that it deserves.
Which is good to hear. I understand you were a youth delegate at the COP27 conference.
Yes.
What was the experience like there in terms of the forestry area, but also how it ties into the whole discussion about sustainability and your interactions with other people from across the world there?
Yeah. So I was really fortunate. I actually had the chance to attend both COP26 and 27, which I think depending on where it's hosted, it's very different in many ways. I would say that COP is a very interesting place, especially the climate one. And so because there are three, right, three different accords. So there is the biodiversity one as well, and then the desertification one. So in terms of the climate COP, I would say that it's a very, very big space for someone who's attending for the first time. It's quite overwhelming, to be honest. And, you know, it really does feel like the world is there, because you'll probably meet people that you've never thought you'd meet, or you never knew existed, which is amazing. But it adds to, you know, how many people are there and how overwhelming it is, because everybody comes with a set of their own priorities and values and goals to achieve at COP. I'd say that, you know, you have a huge range, right, in terms of activists, but also you have the negotiators who are there to discuss different commitments at country levels. So it's a very big mishmash. And I think what helped me when I was there was, again, just taking some time to think about what goals that I wanted to achieve when I was there. So having a forestry background, I was really curious to learn more about how forests specifically are discussed at Climate COP. I think there was some discussion, and like I said, like it's starting to pick up, but compared to a lot of the other discussions around climate change, I would say that the discussion in forests has a lot of room to grow, just because right now the conversations are very focused on planting trees, for example, and carbon sequestration, which is very important, but there's a lot of other values that come from our forests that we can take advantage of, I'd say, and kind of make those linkages. So I think the other thing too is Climate COP very much focuses on just climate change, and there is the other aspects of biodiversity and also conserving that biodiversity that we need to start putting into the conversation as well. So it'll be interesting to see what ends up happening in the future COPs that come up.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, yeah, the world will be watching.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you mentioned a number of different areas that you've worked in, including the sustainable wood products and the areas that still need to be addressed, you know, like the conservation and all of that. And I'm just wondering, in terms of, I guess there's so many changes happening in this area for a young person now thinking about getting into the field, what kind of skills do you think would be most helpful now to develop for the sort of unforeseeable future direction maybe of things? If you had to give advice on 3 or 4 skills that would be most valuable for the future.
Yeah. I think for my career path, I would say one of the skills that's super important would be communication. So this is in terms of communicating with other people and also in a team setting, for example, but also in terms of advocating for yourself and the causes that you care about and speaking about the issues that you care about. So for example, right now in my work, there's a lot of emphasis being placed on being able to translate technical scientific knowledge into simpler terms for those who don't have knowledge necessarily about, you know, a technical aspect of a forest. So it sounds really simple, but it's actually very difficult to do, to kind of distill, you know, a complex system into a statement that's like the size of a tweet, for example, and really having it be impactful. So I think that would be a big skill to have. I think the other important thing to remember is, again, like with science, it's about having a bit of an appreciation for complexity and time. And so something that happens a lot, I think, right now is the world is changing so quickly. Climate change is happening at a pace that, you know, is unprecedented, right? And so there is this, always this discussion of urgency and doing things at a very quick pace, which I think is not wrong, and I don't disagree with it, but I think there's also an aspect of taking that step back, right, to think about what is happening in the natural systems that we have and how to manage that, because there's so much more to it than just kind of doing things quickly and looking at things from only one side of the equation. And it also involves having people, right? So in terms of making sure that all the stakeholders are at the table, that takes time and trust. And we can't always force that, I think. So those are some skills that I think would be important to have. And then I'd also would say that I think mentorship is another, again, it's not necessarily a skill, but it's something that, you know, I would encourage a young person to get involved with. If there's a formal mentorship program, that would be amazing to take advantage of. And I think if there isn't a formal one in place, I would just encourage people to reach out to someone that they're interested in talking to and trying to have a conversation. I think more often than not, people are quite open to having a discussion. And so just finding multiple mentors actually is something that I think will be invaluable to someone who's young and in their career, to just kind of figure out and kind of navigate the space that we're in right now.
I think you started by mentioning the happy accidents and the, I guess that person at the university, the forestry professor, was it? That was, I guess, an inspiration for you. Was that sort of a mentor relationship there?
Yeah, a little bit. I think that was one of the first, he was one of the first people that I spoke to about a career in academia. Mm-hmm. And I had that interest, right, of the medical and the nature aspects together. And he was actually the one who pointed me in the direction of that area of research in terms of wellness and exposure to nature. So it helped a lot just having that 20-minute conversation.
Interesting. Did you have any science background when you went into this? I'm imagining forestry involves aspects of chemistry, biology, physics. I guess nobody can be an expert in all of them. Maybe it's a bit of knowledge of all of them.
Yeah. So in my program specifically for forest sciences, I needed to have some background for all of those sciences that you mentioned. So calculus. So I took two levels of calculus, then chemistry. Organic chemistry and biochemistry, as well as I think I took physics as well, and a few other technical lab writing courses. And so I think it was a good background to have. I wouldn't necessarily say I came into the degree with that knowledge. It was something that I had to work pretty hard to attain and study, but it was useful, I think, in kind of understanding and applying it to other applications. And again, like I mentioned with that communication piece, I think that was what I took from it, was all of these technical aspects, if I had to summarize them and simplify them, that was kind of the skill that I kept practicing every time I learned these technical principles in class.
That is key. I mean, you can know all of the technical knowledge, I guess, but then to be able to communicate it to others and to get that discussion going and get some new ideas going, I guess, is the key. If you were able to turn back time and go back and advise your younger self on the path that you took, is there kind of one change that you would suggest making, or one thing that you know now that maybe you didn't know then, if you wish you had known then?
Yeah, I mean, I think because it was all a happy accident, I think there are always moments of asking myself if this is what I should be doing or if this is going to work out. So I think what I would tell myself is just to trust in the process and just know that things will work out. I'm very fortunate that I fell into something that I really love doing. And so it doesn't feel like work for me, which is amazing. But for some people, I think they're trying to find that thing, right, that they love to do. And I think if we kind of flip it and think about maybe instead like the skills that you'd gain from something instead, that might be a way to kind of navigate a little bit better into finding something that you actually want to be doing. And just being able to apply that skill set that you've picked up and learned into the passions that you'll develop. So for me, it was again, like just realizing that things will eventually connect and that by focusing on the skills, I was able to get myself where I would want to be. And also look back and realize that, you know, I've gotten so much farther than I thought I would as well.
That's really encouraging and I think good advice. I'm just wondering too, in terms of the opportunities in the future in this profession and the type of technologies maybe that are being developed that present particularly interesting opportunities, what would be the one biggest opportunity that you see coming up in forestry that could make a really big change? Is there one that you could point to in particular?
That's also a good question. I wouldn't necessarily point to one. I think, again, I would go back to the skill sets and the communication. So that is a huge area for, I think, young people to get engaged with, because they've got creativity. And, you know, again, we're seeing with social media and all these different technologies that we have, right? We've got like ChatGPT now and AI or different TikTok media applications. There is this potential, I think, to communicate in so many different ways and engage people. I think, again, we have to be very careful with those applications because they can simplify a concept and kind of instill this like false sense of understanding in certain topics, again, that are really complex. But I think it's a good way to kind of start that conversation and engage people and kind of draw them into these really important aspects as well. So, and again, I think the social media aspect can help us bring people to the table that haven't necessarily been there before. So, you know, there's really great content coming from Indigenous creators, for example, that I think is something we need to keep discussing and amplifying. And just like different niche areas of forestry, like I mentioned, like, you know, I think foraging, for example, has become a huge niche area in social media, and there's some really creative ways that people showcase it. So that's a really neat aspect, I think, of that world.
And in terms of monitoring the forests, you mentioned drones as one way of doing that. Is there other technologies that are coming along that allow us to monitor what's going on in the forest and understand more of the processes in a more cohesive way, I guess, a way that explains more of this complexity?
Yeah, I think, well, I know at least with the Canadian Forest Service, like we continue to, you know, gather data. So LIDAR and radar, like all of those different technologies that we have to monitor change, you know, through satellites is something that we're continuing to work on and is super important. So I think technology in terms of just having better data, more data points, and we're able to track more events that happen on the ground, right? So, you know, wildfires and what that looks like, that all kind of feeds into different models that can look at predictability, for example. So I think the more data that we've got and the ability for us to actually process it and kind of synthesize conclusions from it will be really important as well. And I think too, the other thing with the technology piece is there's a lot more open source data now. And a lot of different organizations and countries that are working towards that same goal of having more accessible data. And so by being able to utilize that, I think will help kind of give a more global perspective, right, in the data. And the other piece I'd add to that too is different types of data. So I think, again, with the Indigenous piece, finding ways to incorporate traditional Indigenous knowledge and, you know, work with Indigenous peoples to increase their accessibility to the Western knowledge that we also gather will be something that I think will be a powerful tool as long as we can align them and kind of strengthen those relationships.
I was going to ask about the Indigenous outreach because it's a theme I think that we've heard a lot in these discussions in different parts of the world, and there's a great amount of knowledge there which I think is often overlooked. So in your outreach work, is there any specific outreach that you're doing with the Indigenous communities?
So right now with the work that I'm doing for the Canadian Forest Service, I'm working much more with different international organizations. Mm-hmm. So not necessarily, but in all of the work that we do, I think one of the big questions that I always ask myself, especially if it's public facing, is, okay, who is not at the table, right? And making sure that those who aren't are will be there. And then I'd say for the work that I do with youth engagement, we're always stressing to have diverse perspectives at the table once again, right? So especially with Faces of Forestry, for example, as a project, like we're always seeking stories and perspectives from those who are Indigenous to different parts of the world. So I'd say that's how I do it now. But it's a continuous learning process, and it's something that I think we can all be better at, including myself.
Interesting. And we sometimes think that modern technology is always better than older technology, but really the knowledge that they have is really a form of technology, and it's something that we shouldn't overlook. So no, that's great to hear. In terms of the biggest challenges that forestry is facing now, the big problems that, you know, we're working to overcome, if you had to pinpoint one or two of the biggest challenges that exist currently in terms of getting things done or developing knowledge, where would you point to?
Yeah, it's another really big question. So similar to what I said before, I think the communication aspect is both a challenge and an opportunity for forests. And I also think that ties into managing the forests for different values and considering the people that come to the table with those values as well. So just really balancing all of those systems together, appreciating that complexity and thinking about the trade-offs that we want to be making as a society, I think, is something that faces the forest. And then the other part that I would say too is there's a lot of momentum right now for youth engagement and also engagement with underrepresented peoples in general. So it's something that we need to keep doing. But I also think it presents a bit of a challenge in the sense that it's a bit of a growing pain. So some of these groups might not have the capacity just yet to fully engage and do so in a meaningful way. So somehow finding a way, I think, to kind of support these groups, but also providing them the space to do what they need to do and come to the table will be really important as we move forward, especially when it comes to managing forests and other natural systems.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned different values. Can you give me a sense of just what types of different values are sort of maybe competing?
Yeah. So for example, I would say like right now, the discussion around conservation is we're trying to conserve at least 30% of our lands by 2030. So it's called the 30 by 30 target, which is what it's often known as, which, for example, Canada has agreed to. But Canada also has the commitment of supporting livelihoods, right? Especially of those in local rural communities, forest-based communities. And a lot of those communities are also, the percentage of Indigenous peoples who live in forests are much higher. So there's a lot of Indigenous peoples as well. And so I would say that, you know, balancing sustainable use and support for livelihoods is something that sometimes competes with conservation values. I don't necessarily think that they're always competing. Like there's ways that we can work together to support both values, but sometimes in conversations and in the policy tools that we have, it can kind of make them seem like they're opposing. So I think there's a lot of work right now to kind of bridge those gaps. But as of now, it's also something that we talk about in terms of competing priorities too.
I guess the economics are always a challenge in any sustainability venture. Mm-hmm. In terms of, and this is a question that we're asking all of our guests, is do you have a particular sustainability hero, somebody who in the whole sustainability, whether it's forest or any other sustainability question, is there somebody that really inspires you and why?
Yeah. I was thinking really hard about this question because I actually don't think I have one role model in particular. I think there's several people that I look up to, and I think for me, I look at their qualities, right? And kind of try to pick and see what's inspiring me. for example, like I really admire Greta Thunberg. I think she's very bold, very unapologetic. And I wish I was that bold at her age. I think that's something that is such a great skill and trait to have as a person. And I think someone else I really look up to who's not necessarily sustainability related, but I really love Malala Yousafzai. I think her advocacy for women and children's rights and rights to education in general are extremely important. And, you know, education, I feel like, is so key to a lot of the conversations that we have, right, in terms of sustainability, science, forestry, all of that. And so that's super important as well. And not to be corny, but I think, too, like with all the folks that I work with for Youth for Nature, every person that comes to that table is extremely creative and passionate, and it really helps to keep motivated in the current climate and world conditions that we're in. So those would be my my role models.
Well, that's great. Yeah, and you mentioned education is essential to sustainability, and that's, I think, a really good point that we can't forget. We all have to learn, and we have to continue learning, I guess, from each other. And the Youth for Nature example is a really good one. We'd like to actually put the website for that on this. So maybe if you could send that, we can post the website for anybody who's interested in looking into it, because it sounds like it's a great opportunity to learn from each other, and then also to learn, I guess, from across the world. So we can sit here in Canada and look at forestry one particular way, or the environment one particular way, but it's very different, I guess, across the world. So very important to get that global conversation going.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's been great talking to you. And I don't know, is there any sort of last comments that you might offer in terms of, again, just encouraging a young person to look into a sustainability field, whether it's forestry or any other field, I guess, in this rapidly changing world? Words of advice that you might offer to somebody just with a general interest but doesn't really know which way they want to go, whether it's forestry or somewhere else, you know, how would they make that decision?
Yeah. Like I said, trust in yourself. Think about the skills that you want to build, or even something that fascinates you. Maybe, you know, focus on a question that you have, or think about your personal life or even your community around you, that maybe certain needs that they might be having. So I would say that, and it is a very big space in terms of sustainability and environmentalism, but it's going to be something that is so crucial from this point forward, which is unfortunate. I think it should have been, you know, always a thing. But really, like, we really need everyone on board when it comes to environmentalism and sustainability. So finding a place for yourself and making that space, whatever that looks like, is going to be key.
Yeah, go with the passion, I guess, is the key, and to find that passion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. It's been so great talking to you and learning from you and learning from your experience and all of the different things you've been involved in. I think that's really wonderful. And I think that's a real inspiration, I think, to the people listening to this. So I want to thank you for your time. And yeah, we look forward to more conversations on this and other topics. So thank you, Jennifer Hong, for being part of this.
Thanks so much.
This has been Speaking of Sustainability, a podcast by the Trust for Sustainable Living. Thank you to today's guest, Jennifer Hong. Episode hosted by James Myers. Organized by James Myers. Music by Billy Painter. Find us online by going to trustforsustainableliving.org and join our online community at tsl.earth. Thank you for listening.